Welcome to Career Tools. Our guidance on creating a good bluff, part one. This guidance answers the questions, what is bluff? Why is it important? And how do I encourage people to do what I want them to do? Finally, after years of waiting, The Effective Manager in book form is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and your other retail booksellers, as well as signed copies are available on our website, manager-tools.com. If you want to know the basics of how to manage others effectively in book format, including Kindle and ebook format as well, we encourage you to buy, read, and then implement the guidance in The Effective Manager. So, Wendy, I love that we're finally talking about bluff, bottom line up front. I talk about it all the time. Of course, the high D's of the world, like me and you, love it. We got it from American Marines. Go figure. It's a way to communicate the most important thing, the bottom line, quickly and efficiently. Maybe not every email demands bluff, but if you want a decision, if you want an answer, if you want to be clear about what you're going to need from somebody, you better put it at the front, because there are a lot of people who don't want to hear your story before they find out what you need.
Exactly.
And the problem is a lot of people mess it up. They think bluff is an entire paragraph, which just thinking that, it makes my mind reel.
But it's a really long email. How can I sum it up in one sentence?
Yes. Yeah, well, blim, bottom line in the middle, or blay, bottom line at the end, they just don't work for the vast majority of people. And email, by definition, since we're talking about written communication, is abbreviated. So the idea that, therefore, you should go long in an email is absolutely crazy. So this is our guidance about how to write an effective bottom line up front.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about one sentence. So no paragraphs.
Yes, just one paragraphs. One sentence. Good, good, good.
Use verbs, because you want someone to do something, you have to have a verb that tells them what to do.
What you want them to do. Yeah.
Include deadlines, so they do it when you want them to do it. And include question marks if you want to ask a question and you're expecting a response.
I think I got to tell you that the thing about deadlines is important for bluff. I think there are a lot of people who, when they communicate, want to share the whole story. I think that's a completely reasonable way to be. But we have to remember that communication is what the listener does. And if you want to tell your story in your time, and you doing so causes me not to hear your message because I'm busy, because I'm stressed, because I don't have a lot of time, because I don't want to hear the whole story, I'm happy to do what you want me to do, but I'd rather you tell me what you want me to do right now. If you want to communicate with me in that way, you're reducing your chances of being effective. Now, what's interesting is if we flip it around, if we're talking to a person who prefers a more long-winded approach, they don't mind being told what the idea is or what the issue is or what the need is up front. They want more data afterwards. They want the story as well. But the reason why deadlines appeals to me is, to me, someone who doesn't use bluff when they communicate is basically spending my time. And nobody gets to spend my time but me. And so the deadline issue of, hey, I need it by Tuesday, is helpful to me. When people don't leave deadlines, they essentially suggest that time is not a valuable factor for them. And I was just talking to a CEO about budgets, and he said, hey, give me some basics on this. And I said, okay. I said, budgets are about money and time. And he says, well, I thought they were just about money. I said, no, of course it's about time. I mean, if you're due $1 billion, but you don't have any cash right now, you might go out of business. So the timing of costs and expenses and revenue matters. And I just think there are far too few people. I know I didn't think about time when I was 22, 23, 24. As you get more experience, you realize time is the ultimate metric, because you're not making any more of it. You can always make more money, you can make more resources, but you can't make more time. So to me, this guidance is really all about time management and respect for other people's time.
My thought is, if you don't give me a deadline, I get to prioritize when I do it. And yeah. If you don't like that, that's your problem. You should have given me a deadline.
Yeah, and to not give someone a deadline is to say, whether people want to admit it or not, that there is not a deadline. And if there's not a deadline, I get to choose. And if that choice is not helpful to you, I'm not trying to be unhelpful to you. I'm following reasonable processes regarding how people communicate. All right, first thing, one sentence.
Yes. So the whole point of having bottom line up front and having something that tells people what this email is going to be about, what you are wanted to do, what the important thing in this email is to be able to communicate quickly and effectively so that you're giving the person who's receiving it the information that they need to work out, okay, do I need to do something? Do I need to answer a question? Do I need to read this as background material? Whatever they need to do.
And if I only have time to do one thing, make your decision or read your email. And I only read the email and then I get to the point where I have to do the thing you want me to do. I don't have time for it, right? That to me, that's the moment. Now, there are people who say, well, you know, Mark, you're not respecting that this is the way I like to communicate. And I say, well, okay, but communication is what the listener does. If you're going to communicate in a way that makes sense to you, but not in a way that makes sense to the listener or the recipient or the reader, and therefore they don't hear you, you're not going to get what you want from them.
It makes me think of call to action in marketing. So when you write a marketing ad for whatever, if you're writing it for a car, what the advertiser wants eventually is for you to buy a car. But if it's the first time you've seen the ad, you're not going to immediately go buy a car. So they might want you to go look on their website about some information, or they might want you to go to an event or whatever. And so the ad has one thing to do, and it's the thing they want you to do to kind of get on the track to buying a car. There's no point in them telling you to buy a car because we know that people don't.
Right.
And this reminds me of that. Like, you've got to choose what is the one thing that you want people to do. And it's not necessarily the end result, because for sometimes you have to kind of get people on the track.
And if you're their boss, okay, you can ask them to do five things. But if you're anybody else other than a person's boss, asking them for a list of things, you better have a really good relationship. So what it means is, in written communication, it's probably going to boil down to one thing. And you better tell them the one thing up front. I say again, if you tell me the one thing at the end, and I've just spent the 5 minutes reading your email and trying to understand it, particularly if it's a long one, I've just spent the 5 minutes I would have spent on the thing you needed me to do on reading your email.
Yeah. So if a report is 20 pages and it has a paragraph, a distillation of what's in the report at the beginning, that's an executive summary.
Yeah.
That's not bluff, because it doesn't have one sentence.
Well, I think there would be somebody who says, if it's 20 pages, an executive summary doesn't necessarily have a call to action in it, right? Mm-hmm. A bluff generally implies that a decision will be made or an action needs to be taken or something along those lines. Most people don't write 20-page emails. And so I would say the equivalent in a 20-page report for bluff is an executive summary. Now, I will tell you, you read executive summaries and you can tell it's written by the person who created the study or whatever. Because the first paragraph is, we did a study over 4 years asking. I'm like,
what did you find out?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's what I care about. So the point I was trying to make was, there are different things. There are different appropriate ways of summarizing information on different documents or in different contexts, but they're not bluff. Bluff is a specific thing, usually on an email. And what we're about to explain is how to write good bluff, not how to write a good executive summary or some other kind of summary.
Okay, good. So some examples maybe?
Sure. So this one begins, bluff. I need a decision from you on the conference room for your kickoff.
There's some assumption here that I'm doing a kickoff,
mm-hmm.
and I'm aware that the conference room is somehow a decision that I would make or something, right?
Right. And we failed here because we haven't put a deadline in.
Well, you could say, I need a decision from you today on the conference room for your kickoff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're saying is, when I read this email, I know that the rest of this email is going to potentially tell me what the situation is or try to help me make a decision regarding the conference room.
Exactly. And it's not going to have any other information in it about, you know, what we're having for lunch or what the agenda is or anything else. This email, if this is the bluff, it should be just about that topic.
Well, the way I think about this is a story I like to tell to audiences when we do effective communications conferences. And folks, if you haven't come, the Effective Communications Conference is some of the best training I've ever developed, and it is an outstandingly good day, very energetic. It will absolutely change the way you think about how you talk and how you write. And, you know, I often tell people the story of the person who said, Mark, I'd like to tell you, he sent me an email and he wants some help. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, fine. But he wants help from me and he wants it for free and he wants me to spend my time, which is valuable. And so he says, the first line is, I'd like to tell you a story. Well, at that moment, guys, I'm telling you, I want to shoot myself in the face because I don't want to know a story. But okay, you say, Mark, you're just being gruff and you know, you're a little bit harsh with this person. I said, well, okay, fine. So he starts to tell me the story. There are 12 paragraphs in his email. In the 11th paragraph, in the fourth sentence of five in that paragraph, there is a question mark. Now, if you're knowledgeable about writing and about people asking you things and so on, I'm reading the story about what happened. There are two or three people involved in various issues and so on, and a decision needs to be made. And then at the bottom, it says, what should I do about X? Well, now that I know what the fundamental question is, I have to go back to the top of the mail and reread the entire story to see what parts of the story are relevant. There may be 50% of the story that's basically irrelevant to the crux of the decision this person has. And this person wants to tell me a story. No offense, but people don't make decisions, don't take actions because of stories. They feel things, and that's good. And you may say, you need to have all the background before you can make a decision. And I would say, yes, you're right. But I need to know what the decision is before I can understand the story in the context of the decision. And then when you ask me to make the decision up front, here's what I need from you. And then you tell me the story. You're right. By the time I get to the end of the story, I will be able to make a decision. So therefore, in this sense, you're correct. I have to know the story in order to make a decision. But the story doesn't have to come before what I know the decision needs to be. In fact, if the decision comes after the story, if I don't know what the decision is supposed to be, the story is worthless without the context of the necessary decision. Same way here.
Exactly.
Same way here. If you don't tell me I need to know, you need to know a decision from me on the conference room for the kickoff, and then I start reading about the Medusa room, Perseus or Pegasus and so on, I'm like, why am I reading this?
Yeah, why are you telling me this? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, yeah. So until this moment, it never connected in my head that while I understand why people think he needs to know the story before he makes a decision. Yes, that's true. But the story doesn't need to come before the understanding of the decision. And of course, in your mind, when you're telling me the story, you know the decision.
Exactly.
So the story makes sense to you, but it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, so the rest of that email that I created, just to explain where Medusa came from. So we had the bluff. I need a decision from you today on the conference room for your kickoff. And then it continues. The Medusa room is booked. I found some alternatives. Perseus or Pegasus at the same time and day, or Medusa at the same time, but Tuesday or Thursday. Please let me know which will work best.
And here's what many people will do with that one. Rather than putting the bluff up front, that's a decision. The email starts with, we've got a problem with the conference room. Well, I'm sorry, guys, I got to tell you something. That's irritating. Now, I'm not saying you're responsible for my emotional state. You're not. But we've got a problem with something? I mean, I don't know what the problem is. Why is telling me there's a problem helpful to me? Okay, so we've got a problem with the conference room. The Medusa room is booked. Okay, I still don't know what I need to do here. And I don't know if you've solved the problem or not. And then you say, I have some alternatives. Okay. And then at the end, you say, I need a decision from you. So now at that moment, I go, okay, I guess I have to go back through, read this again, because I don't know. I have to think about what Perseus or Pegasus, and I have to look at my calendar for the time of day. But the moment you say, I need a decision from you today on the conference room, I'm like, okay. Now everything else falls into context, all because of the bluff. Now, you started it by saying, bluff, I need a decision from you today on the conference room. Do we need write BLUF at the top of the mail? What do you think? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I think it's not necessary, but I do think if you're a team or an organization that's in the habit of using BLUF, it's helpful to write it because it then reminds people to do it themselves. And also, it just gives them another piece of context. It says, hey, I remembered to write this at the top, and this is the piece of information that I want you to remember.
Yeah. I do have a friend who says it kind of makes me uncomfortable if I read the BLUF because it suggests the action I have to take, and I'm maybe uncomfortable. I may want more time. And I say, well, okay, but we are an organization. We are an entity that makes decisions, takes actions, is for profit, those kinds of things. And so, okay, well, you're just going to have to feel bad about that. And this is an organizational communication technique that trumps individual idiosyncrasies regarding how one communicates. Okay?
Yeah.
You want to do another example?
Sure. So here's another one. BLUF. Koala upgrade postponed. Systems available this weekend.
But again, Wendy, you're implying to our audience that Koala upgrade is, they're clearly, we're talking about technical systems. Yes. IT systems, server systems, and so on. And they know what Koala upgrade is.
Yes.
And there was an upgrade scheduled, right? Uh-huh. And that the schedule would cause systems to not be available. Okay.
Exactly.
So that's important. Without that, the BLUF means nothing.
Doesn't work. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have to have all, you have to know that the people that to whom you're sending that have all of the background knowledge.
Which, of course, they would. That's the assumption here. But yeah, Koala upgrade postponed, systems available this weekend. That is what is important to most people relative to, look, we've already made the decision. You don't get to weigh in. Mm-hmm. You may have questions, but for the majority of people, your systems will be available this weekend, and you may have made choices that were based on the systems not being available, and so this will allow you to do what you need to do. And the rest of the mail, as the show notes go on to say, could be a technical explanation about the upgrade and the postponement and so on. It could be a discussion about how to communicate this to customers, right? It could be a few lines saying when the upgrade is supposed to happen in the future. But regardless of all that other stuff, they know the most important information right at the top. If it had started with, we've been having some discussions regarding the Koala upgrade. Okay. How is that useful to me? Mm-hmm. I mean, particularly if this is going out to 50 people, every one of the people will have a different response to that. Well, why wasn't I included? Or what does this mean? Where is this going? That's always a bad thing when people are listening to you, but thinking, where is this going? Because every time their head tells them, where is this going? They're not actually reading your words because you can't have two words in your head at the same time. And they know what they need to know. If they do it, if you do it the other way and they say, we've been having these discussions, there have been some concerns, we felt we could get through them, we've now decided we can't. Okay, that's great. So what does this mean for me?
Exactly. Imagine you're like some call center person and you're going to be on the help desk all weekend and some of your customers' systems were planned not to be available and now they are available. And you're answering chat questions about, hey, can I use this thing? I thought it was going down. It still seems to be here. Do you really need the entire explanation? Or do you just need to know the system is available because the upgrade that we planned wasn't planned?
I would say it even more simply than that, I think, or maybe it's too simplistic. I don't know. And that is, there are two types of people. People who want to know the detail and people who don't.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody needs to know what the bottom line is. So you give the bottom line up front. I read this about the upgrade being postponed, and I don't give a hoot about the technical stuff. You've just saved me a bunch of time. For mm-hmm. those people who choose to read on, they get to know the things they need to know, which may cause them to have to make other decisions as well. But you've essentially given everybody in the audience the most important thing, and then some people will choose to keep reading. If you do it the other way around, everyone has to read everything, which may make you feel important, but actually makes me feel angry. And not everybody needs all that. Everybody only needs what is the bottom line, which therefore oughtn't go at the bottom.
Yeah, exactly. And people might be thinking, couldn't you put this in the subject line? And you can. Sometimes you want the subject line to be different and sometimes you don't. But as we've said before, you can say something seven times and people will hear it once.
Yes.
So putting, if it's the most important thing, putting it in twice does no harm at all.
Exactly. So you can put the bottom line at the top, up front, and at the bottom. Yeah, we actually call it BLAB, which is a great acronym, bottom line at bottom. In other words, you're going to blab at me for 5 minutes and you're going to tell me what I want to know at the bottom.
Yeah, it's perfect.
And guys, I meant to say this earlier. Bluffs are like a distilled version of an executive summary. A 5-page or a 1-page email ought to have a bluff at the top. A 20-page report, you don't have to have a bluff. You can have an executive summary, which is a paragraph or two. But never forget that word executive. If you're talking to an executive, if you're sending an email to an executive, unless you have rock solid proof that they're not a high D, that they're not a make decisions, take actions, cut to the chase, bottom line, no nonsense, a little bit rough around the edges, unless you have proof that they're not that person, and that's because you know DISC and you've spent a lot of time with them, and so you've made a considered judgment that they're not, you better communicate with them with bottom line up front. Executives will not read a long email. Hey, look, I need to give you an update on the situation that happened this weekend. No, you don't. What are the decisions I need to make? You know, hey, a situation occurred and this happened and we need to take some action. Or you say, this doesn't take any action, but if you're interested, this is the background on what happened over the weekend.
Yeah, because the bluff can say, hey, this is for information only about a product or a situation. Or it can say background reading or something other than, hey, you need to take an action. But then if people know up front, they know what priority to give it and what they're reading for when they start reading.
It's a matter of respect. It says, I know it's completely reasonable for you to have a different concept of what this is because we have different roles. Okay. You see it differently. It's my project. It's your project. Somebody else's project. It's somebody else's project. And she's my friend, but she's not your friend. You are showing somebody else respect to say, I know you may choose to see this differently, and I'm going to give you the information you need in order to decide how you're going to process this. As opposed to putting the bottom line at the bottom and have the person getting to the end and going, I just wasted a bunch of time. And surely everybody wants to be respectful of everybody else's time when the thing I hear the most everywhere I go is whining about, I don't have enough time to get my work done. Well, actually, everybody has enough time to get their work done. It's just that they're making the wrong choices.
They fill their time with other stuff.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's do another one. This is one about a contract being won. Mm-hmm. And so this is going out to an organization that either was involved in pitching for the contract or is involved in the activity around the contract after the fact. It could be sales, it could be operations, and it clearly involves a number of people, okay? So again, your organization has been pitching a particular company on winning a contract, and a meeting's going to be announced. So go ahead.
Bluff. Disney contract one, all hands meeting, 3 p.m. today in the cafeteria.
To be clear, folks, sometimes Wendy sounds British because she is. So, Disney contract one. You said it so fast, I think the one in British, in posh language. I don't think they realized it was the past tense of win.
Yes. And again, we could follow this by a list of departments, each of whom need to bring something to the meeting. So, engineering, bring your plans for implementing the production of these figures for this new movie, or marketing, we need provisional ideas on how to market this thing or which sponsors we should go with. But it doesn't matter because the bluff contains the two most important pieces of information. One, we won the contract and that's going to affect everybody. And two, we're getting together to discuss that this afternoon.
I really saw this as, I want to tell you what happened, but within 5 or 7 words, tell you what that means for you. If you had just sent, we're going to have an all hands meeting at 3 o'clock, here's what you need to bring. And at the bottom, this is because we won the Disney contract. The whole time I'm looking at this list, trying to figure out whether or not I'm impacted or affected by actions I need to take between now and this meeting time, I'm wondering in what respect is this? The moment I see, oh, we won the contract, I'll be like, oh, okay, well, that means this and this and this and this that the writer can't possibly know. And his definition of me being prepared is not as complete as my definition of being prepared.
If you're the kind of person who likes people to do what you want them to do, like me, the idea of telling them the contract has been won will goad them into much more action, much quicker, much more excitement.
Wendy, are you saying on air that you like other people to do what you want them to do, and you are also very good at doing bottom line up front?
Oh, no, I wouldn't claim to be very good.
Oh, good. I just thought I'd check on it, because, folks, often Wendy wants me to do things, but often I don't get a bottom line up front. That's it for part one, folks. Come back next week for part two. More good stuff.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want the how-tos in management wherever you are, check out the free Manager Tools mobile app. It's available on both iOS and Android devices. Go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Manager Tools app. Just search for Manager Tools in the respective store, or go to the Manager Tools website, www.manager-tools.com, and you'll find the links on the bottom of the homepage. Once you've installed the Manager Tools app, you'll have access to all the Manager Tools and Career Tools shows anytime, anywhere you want. With easy searching of podcasts by category, using the map of the universe, or using built-in search functions, it couldn't be easier. Additionally, if you're Manager Tools personal licensee, you'll have easy access to all the show notes right from the app whenever you want. Go to the App Store and download the Manager Tools mobile app. You'll be happy you did.